All right, so it's just about that 6 o'clock hour, so I think we'll just get this going. I've seen pretty much everybody that's been invited to speak at this is here, so we'll just get going. Thank you everybody for coming out and listening to all of us talk about what happened to be a ironic time for this conference call to happen. So last Monday, I got with Serge in the public health nurse's office, and we scheduled this meeting to happen with the topic of what would happen in Gus Davis when the COVID-19 virus somebody tests positive. And we know that with the airport screening setup that we have in place of point of entry, that day was going to come sooner than later. So here we are with that meeting. In this, I've invited Search to be here, and the public health nurse is. One of them couldn't make it, but a couple of them are here. Susan Webb from the public health nurse out of Juneau is here, and one of her cohorts is also with us to answer questions, and I'll let them introduce themselves shortly. And then also Search is here, and Lisa's over at the tent right now during our last day of training. But Megan Bozak from Sitka, she's the PIO over at Search right now. She's here to help answer questions, and I know that I saw Carly Allen's name on here as well, and she's out of Wrangell for Search, so we can also draw her in until Lisa gets back at least also. So I guess for this quick town hall meeting, it's scheduled for an hour. I wanted this to be brief and to the point, and we'll get through the different organizations and let everybody talk, and then we'll open it up to questions. I want it to be civil and nice, or not necessarily nice, but I want the questions to be directed well, and no back and forth batter type of stuff and all that. So I'm going to start with Susan, who is the public health nurse. They kind of play a huge role in after a positive test is done. They play probably the biggest role in the follow-up and all of that. So I'll let Susan start this whole thing, and she can explain the public health nurse's role and what they do and all of that good stuff if you're ready, Susan.
Travis, can you hear me okay?
Gotcha.
Okay. Hi, this is Sue Webb. I'm the itinerant public health nurse. And I can hopefully give a brief synopsis of what exactly we do when there's a positive and a contact investigation. One of the things, though, I'm going to stress is we cannot violate HIPAA on anybody, no matter what, except if it coincides with their medical provider or what we're dealing with CDC. One of the things that we start out with, we get notified if there's a positive, and then we contact the person and we go back from the day they were either tested or they become symptomatic, and we go 2 days back before that when they would be infectious. We also go back 14 days and go through all their contacts. We look at who is considered a close contact versus not a contact or who might be at risk. And then we get the information how to contact those people. We also, with the person who's positive, we get some who are symptomatic and some who are not, no symptoms whatsoever. And there's certain guidelines that we go by when they are released from their isolation. The contacts is a little bit different, and this we have come across this a lot with the airport. Just because it's negative does not mean you're scot-free. And that goes not just the contacts, but anybody who's traveling or visiting. A negative doesn't mean you're golden. We tell the contacts to hunker down. Basically, they can do stuff around their home and this. They can't go to social gatherings. They can't share this. They have to maintain social distance and a mask. And usually they are under 14 days contact. There are different things too we can go by testing with them, especially if they've already had one negative. But we call them every single day for 14 days. If they're released, we let them know and we give them a release letter. If they get sicker, that's a whole different story. And that's the same thing with the person who is positive. If they get sick, anytime they're quarantined, we add on more days to that because they can't be released because we don't know how infectious they were. We contact those people who are deemed what we call close contact, and we're real meticulous about that. Not somebody just passing by, not a contact to what we call a contact. There are some people in a household that we consider low risk, and it's something that is evaluated between us and the epidemiology. And I'm not sure if there's any other questions. That's basically what we've been doing since this has started, contact tracing, working with them. We also go over instructions of what they have to do, any questions. And then also if they get sick, what they have to do, or if they feel there was another contact, they forget, it might be a week later, but we go into that. We do not accept the serology antibody test. It has to be the PCR or what, the nasal swab. And the other thing, when we release the positive, we go by A, either symptoms or the day they were tested. If they have no symptoms, we can go by that day they were tested and we go 10 days out. If they have had no symptoms at all, they are released. And this goes back to if they develop symptoms in that 10-day period, we have to dock on another 10 days. The other thing that we go by is 72 hours of Tylenol free from their last day of symptoms. They have to be free of the symptoms and they can't have pain relieving medication to keep their fever down. And if it's extended, we do let them know. Same thing with the contacts. Some of the things we've done, if a contact gets with another somebody unknown, that adds on to their quarantine time. And all this is we take down, we record it, we send it up to Anchorage, which in turn sends it to the CDC. And Travis, I don't know if there's any other questions people want to ask on this to me, because I'm open for questions and can answer to my best ability, or I will find out for people.
Yeah, I think we'll just open up for questions kind of at the end and just try to let people say what our roles are and stuff like that, and then we'll get to the questions part. I'm sure people are going to have all types of questions with the news that went out today. So I'm sure that we'll have questions. How's that? I guess we can move on to, I'm still kind of waiting for Lisa's name to pop up before we head over to search. So I'll just talk real fast about the fire department and what we've been doing here as far as how we operate if we were to catch any 911 call at this time. We make sure that we approach every call as a COVID case. We wear all of our PPE, gowns, masks, shields, N95s, or a surgical mask, depending on which one you want to wear. We send one person inside to deal with the patient and get all of the questions as much as possible and limit all of those people from going inside. We also are trying to keep we haven't had a call for a while, but so the next time we will make sure that whoever drives the ambulance is always the clean person that runs in and out of the ambulance to get more gear so that we're not bringing whatever is inside of the house in or wherever back into the ambulance until we have to make it dirty. En route, we have we turn on the ventilation system to pull all of the air out, so it creates a positive pressure system pulling it out, or how whatever that word is. It pulls all the air out, and so that's exchanging fairly quickly. And then we make sure that we, when we're all done, we have a pretty good disinfectant spray that we spray the whole system down and wash everything that we can touch or anything that where items of the virus could have hidden. So we do a good job of cleaning it out after every use as well. So we're taking, and we've got lots of PPE here. We've got lots of gloves, lots of masks, and we've got access to some more. We've also taken on through the city, the airport screening job contract, where we have hired 5 people to meet planes. All of those people wear the same PPE that we would wear into a call, except for the gown, I guess. But they wear masks, gloves, and eye protection, and make sure that they meet these people with a good amount of distance, a 6-foot distance, and there's no real interactions with the people except for handing paperwork and handing some stuff back and forth. But it's all socially distanced. We get tested every 2 weeks. We started on Saturday. We all took our first tests and have all gotten our results back. I'm pretty sure all of us have gotten our results back now. And then we retest again on Saturday, and we'll test every 2 weeks to make sure that those people are staying COVID free as well. So we're looking out for our volunteers and how we respond and how we do all of that stuff. So we're really trying to slow down when we do our calls and make sure that we're going into environments that are clean and trying to limit the amount of people that go into those environments as well. We do have standing orders from Dr. Vaught, who's our medical director. And, you know, we go off of his orders on what he has. And then we also have a infection control plan, which covers pandemics and all of that stuff. And those really follow the CDC's recommendations for the most part. So that's who that's how we've been going. We stay up to date with the CDC's and how they recommend us to go on the calls. So that's what we're doing at the fire department. And then on the city side of the things, you know, we're just watching out, trying to be ready on the EOC. We're pre-planning for this day till we got this positive test. So I foresee us doing some meetings in the near future and going on from there and trying to figure out what we're going to do next as a community as well. And I think a lot of what Susan and what we learned from search also will be tied into what we feel our community should do next and stuff. So as we learn more about the cases and how the process works in Gus Davis and how they trace and track, we'll be learning a lot over the next few days, I imagine. So I don't see Lisa's name on there yet, but I'm going to let Megan start talking for search if she wants to.
Sure. Hi, Travis. Thank you for the invite. I'm Megan Bozak. I'm the Director of Marketing and Communications for search. I'm based in Sitka, but get to support Lisa and the clinic there in Gustavus. So a little bit about the last few months. We have been busy, as you can all imagine, starting, I guess, really early February, mid-February, our incident command system established for the entire region, and we started working to create guidelines, screening protocol, and to also begin drills in all of our locations. I think the biggest thing that has continued to change Travis, it said you muted me.
You're sorry. Unmuted now, Megan.
I clicked it on.
Okay, great. Thanks, Carly. Okay, so as I was saying, the screening protocols have been the biggest continuous change that we have seen throughout the region. We've worked hard to keep in constant contact with the state of Alaska and CDC to monitor those guidelines and watch for those changing symptoms and also put those into play at all of our facilities. We've developed multiple tiers of readiness plans. So we've gone from a state of readiness at a tier 1 level all the way to developing surge plans at a tier 3 level for our entire consortium. There in Gustavus, there's been a number of different things that have happened at the clinic, and I'm sure Lisa will speak more clearly to this, but really have been working to develop safety protocols for the facility and for our staff. And those start with pre-screening appointments that are required before every single appointment via phone. Also, we do screening of patients and staff at entry to the facility. We require masking. There's been modifications that have been done to the waiting room to make sure that there's proper social distancing. We do vigorous cleaning, as you can imagine, lots and lots of disinfecting. And just like Travis mentioned for the EMS crew, all search staff across the consortium are also mandatory COVID tested every 2 weeks. So those are just a few of the things that we've done. We've played roles in all of the EOCs across the region, including working in Gustavus. And if someone were to test positive, that's a big concern. We've been dealing with that a lot lately across the region. We seem to have had a surge in cases as residents and visitors have been coming into the state. If you test positive, the biggest thing we can recommend is to stay calm. There's a major concern, and it's very alarming to hear that, but we really encourage folks to stay calm, stay home, and stay isolated. If you can isolate within your home in a specific room, that works best. We encourage folks to work with your public health nurse to take their calls and to continue connecting with them throughout the quarantine. We'll also ask that you monitor your symptoms. If you have underlying conditions or if your symptoms worsen, we encourage you to contact a clinic right away. If it's to a point that's elevated, you'll be transferred via Medevac to Mount Edgecombe Medical Center in Sitka for the care that's needed. And I'm sure Lisa will speak to that as well. And also, in addition to all of these changes, our practice has worked hard to implement new and progressive ways to hold appointments so that folks don't have to come to the clinic or don't have to leave their home. So we've done a lot of work on our telehealth options. We can hold appointments via phone and via video, offering different resources to folks. And those appointments are available by calling the clinic at any time. Carly, anything you'd like to add?
Thank you, Megan. That was really great. I'm Carly Allen. I administer the primary care clinics for search, and I'm located in Wrangell. I'm in a supporting role for the Gustavus Clinic and for Lisa up there. I just want to say thanks for inviting Search to this forum. I'm really excited to see your fabulous community turnout. And I appreciate Travis for putting this together. Communication is really key during times like this. I think our main role with Search is to provide healthcare in these communities that we serve, not just COVID or sick care right now. We're really focused on being able to provide baseline healthcare. And as Megan referenced, we have some significant procedures in place to keep our facilities as safe as possible. We have a commitment to providing care throughout this pandemic, to partner with our communities and with public health. So as this evolves, we will be involved and they're in a supporting role as well. Thank you.
Is Lisa on here yet? I don't know if she logged in on her phone or are you here? Well, while we wait for Lisa, Vicki Garrett has her hand up, so maybe we'll take her question real fast. Where'd you go? Go ahead, Vicki, you're on. If I can find you, I'll unmute you.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
This is somewhat unrelated, but I'm just confirming that they are testing at the airport in Gustavus.
That is correct. We started on Saturday, June 6th on the first flight that came, well, the second flight officially that came into Gustavus, I believe. And we've tested over 20 people.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Any other questions out there till we hear Lisa come on? I'm sure you're somebody. Raise your hand. Kimber Owen, you're up. All right, Kimber, you should be unmuted.
Okay, you can hear me now?
Yep.
Okay, so I guess there's this big loophole in what the governor's mandate was, is that people, if they couldn't find a test or chose not to test because they could get a test at their destination, so they could infect that whole plane and then come here or go to Juneau or wherever they go in the world and infect that whole plane and hold a, and then, you know, they sequester in their lodge or their home or wherever they are, and they come positive. So then I'm guessing the contact has to go back to that whole airplane from Seattle or Anchorage or wherever it came from that came to Gustavus. So is there any way we could approach him and say, you need to get rid of that loophole, that you need to test before you even get on a plane? You can't do it at destination. Definitely not in Gustavus.
So he'll call you.
I think that that's something that we could at least do, writing something to the governor and requesting that if the council and the mayor want to go that route. But is there anything that you can add to that, Susan, that might clarify Kimber's question there?
What we do, and thanks Travis and Kim for answering that, it's not the whole plane. We go by CDC guidelines, and it's so many seats ahead and so many seats behind. And I do know when people going on the airplanes, you hear different things, and people are encouraged to wear their mask when they get on. I have not flown, so I don't know how well a lot of the flights are enforcing it, but there's a certain criteria that we use, just like if somebody had active TB on the plane, that we go through our investigation, and if they're within what we call close contact, then they are contacted either by the epidemiologist or the public health nurse, or depending on if they're leaving the state, depending on where their destination is.
Okay, thank you. I ask a second question?
Go for it. And then after, Kimber, once you're done, we're going to move on to Lisa because she finally jumped in too. So just so you know.
Oh, well, I don't want to take over for any of her time.
No,
just real quickly, if somebody, there's a lot of people, I mean, in this community who are not signed up for like Medivac and all those two things because it's not affordable to them. And a quarter of our community being in the over 65 and being vulnerable, who will the COVID-19 CARES Act money pay for those people if they get to the point where they need to be hospitalized, to be sent by Medivac to Sitka, I guess is where we're gonna go? Because as I understand, the carriers don't wanna carry anybody positive.
So I haven't heard that the carriers don't want to take on passengers. I'm getting some feedback somewhere. Mute mic. Sorry. All right, trying to figure out where it's at. There we go. Anyways, I've talked to all of the air carriers in Southeast Alaska, and they haven't told me that they won't transfer COVID positive patients. They're all well aware of the precautions that they have to take and everything that they need to do, and their role in this healthcare crisis as well. So they're all helping us out in this too. And at one point, I don't know if it's still true, and it's on my follow-up now, is that at one point, Seaplanes even had some planes that they were going to have available, or pilots that were fit tested and taking those precautions to fly non people that don't need to necessarily need a medevac plane to be transferred. So the option of being transferred is there. The cost of it, the city doesn't cover that cost. That comes out of your personal cost or your insurance that you have. They do all offer bedside signup, so you don't have to own it. You don't have to have the insurance today, but they do have all three of them do have bedside signup also, starting at $49. But if CARES Act money wanted to be an issue to buy everybody in the community air insurance or something along those lines, or have money set aside a pot for that to help that community member, talk to your council members about that, because the CARES Act stuff is being discussed with the council now. Does that answer everything, Kimber?
Instead of me asking questions, she has probably all the answers. Thank you so much for what you just said.
Yep, thanks for the questions. All right, Lisa, you're up. We kind of all went around and described our roles. Carly and Megan kind of did a lot for you, but I think people would like to hear what you're going to be doing as the search clinic here and what people should be aware of and all that good stuff when that happens. So
okay, I'm not sure if folks have specific questions, but if they went through all of what we do, we would provide any care to anyone, basically. So that is not going to change in regards to the hands-on care. And I think a lot of folks are unaware that we are still seeing patients. We have a different way with certain folks that we see folks. We can see people after we've screened them coming into the clinic. We actually can see them if we need to in the parking lot. We have done video visits through DoxyMe. So that's another platform that we're using here as well. There are times when I've done phone visits only because folks here don't have internet or don't have cell service or that sort of thing. So we've actually done a landline phone visit. I've done Zoom visits. I'm still doing, like I said, we're still doing quite a bit of visits in the clinic, but we're doing a lot of the screening beforehand. I think it's probably in regards to specifically, I would guess COVID-19. And as kind of our protocol, we follow through what we have for search. I think they may have gone through that with you. But we are going to be doing daily monitoring. I know that the if there are positive cases, I know that public health nurse is doing the same thing. We are in contact with public health nursing as well. And so that's something that we try to coordinate the care as best we can. Are there any specific questions in regards to care that people have? No questions?
Lisa, this is Carly. I see a few people with their hands up, but I think Travis has control of muting and unmuting perhaps, and maybe he said to step away for a moment.
Oh, okay.
Hi, Lisa. This is Shelley Owens. I just sort of stepped in and unmuted myself. I was wondering what the search criteria are or is for testing. I've been hearing that it's symptomatic testing, and I'm just wondering if that's the case and if it looks like we'll ever have an opportunity to test all of the residents in the community.
Right now, the testing is exactly that. It's symptomatic testing. So if you were to call, and we've been doing since the onset of COVID-19, you basically call the clinic. We discern whether or not you meet that criteria. If you do, we do a parking lot test. Literally, you come into the parking lot, we go out in our full gear, PPE, we come out and do the test. We will contact you when the test is done. If we're doing a PCR test, we also have the rapid COVID-19 testing machine here. I think you folks are aware of that as well. But as far as symptomatic testing, that's basically what we're doing. Asymptomatic, not at this point.
All right, I'm back. Sorry about that. I had somebody pounding on the door. All right, so Whitney, I think that question might have been done. So I'm going to move on to Whitney. You're up.
Thank you. And I don't know who's necessarily going to respond to this. It's also about testing. On Wednesday, Dr. Zink seemed to allude to testing delays at the state health lab. There appears to also be significant lag in the reporting of testing data, which obviously affects the positivity rates that she's so proud of. At this point, the state test data has fewer positive tests than there are actually cases in Alaska. As many people have tested multiple times, we used to have more positive tests to cases, and now we have fewer. Some regions have no positive tests yet, despite press releases indicating that people were physically present in that region when they were tested. Our region has seen no uptick in tests following the Gustavus Airport testing and their staff being tested. To date, the state data set only has 175 tests in the 7 communities of the Yakutat and Huna-Angoon area, since the very beginning, and only 22 tests since June 1st. So my multi-part question is, how is Search keeping up with their test data reporting? 2, how many tests have been performed in Gustavus? 3, is there absolutely free testing available in Gustavus? And finally, is testing available for businesses with high contact positions if asymptomatic testing is not available?
Who wants to take a stab at that one? I think that's above my, I'm not involved with the testing that process, in that process.
I think it's a multi-part answer. In regards to the testing in Gustavus, we've been testing since the onset of COVID-19. In regards to how many tests are we performing, that is something that's reported through Search. If you go to the Search website, with the COVID-19 testing information, I'm not sure if it's listed there or not, quite frankly, because we get that information on a regular basis. I think Carly can answer whether or not that's there on a regular basis or not, but I'm pretty sure that they're updated on a daily basis. I can't answer anything to the state. I do have nothing to do with that as far as the state testing. In regards to testing for businesses, there is business testing available. It is something that's a cost to the business. Let's just say there's a charter fishing business that wants to test all their employees that are asymptomatic. They can do that through Search. It is cost to them, $175 per test. That is something the business has to agree to. There is a process that goes with that. And there's a contact person that I deal with on a regular basis. We've been doing those as well here. Her name is Ashley Simpson. At Search.
This is Carly. I know there was one other piece to that, and that is, yes, we are offering free symptomatic testing for all. I know that was a piece in there.
Is that for anybody, Carly, that wants to go to Search, or is that just at the airport thing?
No. The airport is asymptomatic testing.
Right.
At the clinic, anybody with symptomatic testing, we are offering those tests free of charge, okay. And we have been since the beginning.
Okay. Yeah.
Any asymptomatic, all right. All right, did we get all the parts of that question? I think, Whitney, you can come back if we didn't get more. I'm gonna go to the phone number ending in 7666. Sorry, Whitney, go ahead.
I don't think I got a sense whether Search thinks that all their data is in the state data set. They report that there's 5,783 tests performed, but that is across all of their offices, which we cover multiple regions. So 175 tests in the Yakutat plus Huna-Angoon seems pretty low, particularly since we've had the uptick in airport screening and otherwise. Does 175 sound right for the 7 communities?
I can't answer to that. I can't. I only know what's going on within this community.
We do update our data regularly. I know that, but I'm not involved in that process, so I don't know where those delays come between us reporting and the state updating their page. My understanding is Gus Davis is the only one of these communities that is currently doing out-of-state, intrastate airport testing. So that doesn't surprise me at all, the data you listed.
This is Megan. I can share a little bit of that. So from a public information standpoint, the numbers are a really tough thing. Every time we report on numbers, they're immediately outdated because, of course, there's always tests that are going on. We've got resources at our COVID19.search.org website that shows you the number that is done throughout the consortium, including the number of pending and any positives throughout. I pulled the data specific to Gustavus this morning, and as of yesterday, there was 40 tests that had been completed in the clinic and 15 tests at the airport. Travis had mentioned that there, of course, has been additional tests done at the airport today, and I'm sure more testing at the clinic. So those numbers, as soon as we release them, are outdated, but there is significant amounts of testing happening.
All right, so now we'll go to ends in 7666, whatever.
Hi, this is Tom Pritis. I had a question before. Just turn it off. Yeah, my question was how many people were on the jet that came in with the case? Do we know how many other passengers there were?
At this time, I don't think that that's been released, and I think the public health nurse office is still working on all that information and going through that.
Okay, yeah, that was my question at this point. I'll probably come back in later. Thanks.
When the day happens that I can release more information and all that happens, everybody will know as much as I can release, just so you guys know that. We're going to go to the next one is David Nemeth. You're up. I got you unmuted. Maybe not. There you go.
Okay. Can you hear me now? What determines whether you're sent to like Bartlett Hospital or to Sitka? Is it up to the individual or the incident command system or the clinic, or how does that work? Because Juneau is so much closer and there's Alaska seaplanes versus medevacking all the way to Sitka.
So I can answer parts of that. On the medevac system, it just depends on where, how sick you are and all of that. So seaplanes will take you, you know, you can't just hop on a normal seaplanes flight. It would have to be a chartered flight, most likely, if you're a known COVID patient. And if you can walk and talk and do all that, that would probably be a good route. But the medevac plane is mainly for when you're really sick and you need extra care on that end. I don't know the answer to why you would go to search, but mainly because in Sitka, but mainly probably because your initial care started at the clinic. That would be where your initial start is you call the clinic, you get tested there, you become their patient in sense, and the great follow-up that you would probably get at search is why you would be transferred there. But I will let search answer that question too.
I think that answer, and I can see just the care that we give with regular patients. So if someone comes in here and says to me, it's an emergent situation, they need to be life flighted somewhere else, I have to discern where they're going to go based on their symptoms. And that's really dependent upon the patient. So I can't tell you, will you be in Juneau? I can certainly call them. I can run this by the doc there. I can also, one of the situations that we've gone through, and we've got a whole setup in the hospital at Mount Edgecombe Hospital. The reason why we have really promoted that is because they also have housing where you could actually do your quarantine right beside the hospital. If you were symptomatic, then you could actually go into the hospital. So it really depends upon the situation and the patient. Some people will opt to stay here until they're symptomatic enough that they can't breathe. Then we have to figure out where they're going to go. The patient is always one of those folks that drives that ship. I have to go where they're able to go, and what care they need, it's really dependent upon their situation.
Does that answer your question, or does anybody else want to add anything?
That answers my question, thanks.
Yes, thank you. All right, Greg Strebler, you're up. Greg Strebler, unmuted you. Maybe. All right, Greg, how can we get you unmuted? There you go, Greg, you're unmuted.
Try it again. That work this time?
Yeah.
Ah, there we go.
Okay, Judy.
I wanted to know if someone tests positive for coronavirus in Gustavus, say symptomatic or asymptomatic, do we have a place or places for them to isolate, because they might be just a visitor here and not have a home here, or if they do have a home here, there might be other people in the household that one would not want to put them in the same household. Do we have such a thing?
So that's a good question. If you travel, the mandate says if you travel in the state and you're a visitor here or coming in on a fishing lodge, that you should know that if you test positive, that you're here for 14 days and that is at your own expense. All your food, all your lodging, and all of that. So when you travel, when people are talking about traveling in, those lodge owners and those people, family members coming in, remind them that they should have a 14-day plan on what they're gonna do just in case they happen to get sick because somebody was on the plane or in passing or whatever that case might be. So as a visitor coming into the state, that's on you to figure out and take that responsibility, or those lodge owners or spots to do that. We all know Gustavus isn't the best spot. We don't have lots of hotels. We don't have lots of that stuff to necessarily have a place just standing by and waiting for those patients to do that. So I would also suggest, like it was said earlier, that if you have a family member that's coming back, that they separate from the family as best as possible in the house, separate to a room, have good ventilation in that room. Don't interact as much as possible when you have to, wear a mask. If you got two rooms, we know that's not a thing in Gustavus, but if you got two bathrooms, have one bathroom for them and so on. So. There's not really the best setup for us to do that. It'd be more on a case by case basis, I think, and that we would assist as the community and as the city and in whichever way we can to help that logistically happen. And Whitney's had a great group that was going for a while, and I'm sure that's still a thing that's could be utilized, and people have voice their thoughts and what they can do to help in volunteer in times if you need stuff. So there's some options out there, and we'll always make it. We'll figure it out if we need to, and when that day comes. But we all know there's no nice hotel here to just have advantage of. So yeah. I hope that answers a little bit of that. So
yes, thank you.
All right, let me get back up there. I think Phoebe, you were up next.
Thank you. If we're with this positive case in Gustavus and they do the subsequent contact tracing investigation and we are identified as being a contact, what would that person expect? What is the protocol that happens if you're called by the public health nurse and notified that you may have come in contact with that person who's positive?
Susan, that one's on you.
Okay. This is Sue, and thanks for that question. When we contact somebody to a positive, we inform them. We get their email. We send them a log sheet for 2 weeks. And from their last day of contact to that positive, they go 14 days of being in quarantine, watching for the symptoms. The public health nurse calls them each day. We send them out instructions to see how they're doing, and we go over all the symptoms that have come up, not just, you know, cough or chest pain. We do have people who can't get a thermometer, and we go by feverish symptoms. And so we go by that, and a lot of times on some people who get really sick, we have to extend that 14-day out because a lot of times they end up being in the hospital. Other people stay asymptomatic through the whole thing, and then we give them a clearance. Incubation period is 2 to 14 days. So that's why people are on there for 14 days. And if they do start having symptoms, like on the 13th day, we have to extend them out because their body or the bug in them, the virus has finally taken active and it makes them susceptible to more people. And we give them instructions of what they can do, can't do, social distancing, and they're given a number that they can call us. But we do monitor them 14 days. If they break that quarantine time, we add on another 14 days, and that's been known to happen in other areas of the state. If they, in that contact period, that 14 days, they might decide, well, you know, I was close contact and maybe it's allergies or, you know, even a runny nose, we encourage them to call their provider to see about testing. There is that option, but I still stress if they come back negative, negative is only for that time period. People who have been negative through the whole quarantine time, a month later can come across somebody and all of a sudden get sick. So, and the best I can say is we do monitor them very closely. And if they come up positive in that period when they get sick and that, we have to do another contact investigation. The same thing we go through because now they become what we call like an index patient, and they're taken off the daily monitoring and they turn into a contact, and then we have to go through if there's another set of people from them. It's a long, drawn out, very tedious, and we try to be really good detectives. We become quite nosy, intimate, whatever. We ask things to trigger their mind. Sometimes, if they get to be a positive, they're so stressed out, and we tell them, just think about it, give us a call back, if you can't remember everything. But we've become pretty good detectives throughout this because we've done it with active TB and other STDs that we can help jog their memory, see if there was something they missed. I mean, we do get some cases, I did have a headache, a week ago, and I was really tired. We try to be really good detectives.
So Phoebe, I think you had a follow-up on that.
Yes, thank you. I was just wondering the timeline for that. I know there's a lot of questions in Gustavus about this person and where they may have or may have not gone. And I'm wondering how long these kind of contact tracing investigations take place. Do they happen over the weekend? Would people not expect to be contacted until next week? Or what's the kind of timeline for that investigation? Thank you.
Travis, am I unmuted?
Yep. Oh, you just muted yourself. There you go.
Okay. Okay, this is Sue. As soon as we know there is a positive, we get on it. And contacts are not notified the following week. We try to notify everybody as soon as we can. And I'm usually from, if I got a contact yesterday that or a positive case, and this is more than one in a day, we get it going. And we really try to do it within that time period or the next day. All the and we call in public health nurses all over the state to help us with these, especially in the follow-up. But we do not wait until next week to call the contacts. Most, at least in my experience, we have been so quick on this to determine and give instructions. And the only time there's been a layup on that has been wrong phone number or they're not returning our calls. And then sometimes we'll send somebody out.
I have a question then. If somebody thinks that they made contact with somebody that could be infected, can they call the public health nurse or how does that go?
You know, it varies. And what I tell people is if you were considered a risk or that close contact, you would know. We would contact you. Now, there can be some cases where, like I said, you know, this can be a stressful time where somebody said, well, you know, I was actually in the car with that person, you know, sitting in the passenger seat, and I know it was, you know, at least 15 minutes, no mask. And so we would, again, evaluate that. But it still goes back to not all our contacts are tested, just because with the supply, if there are asymptomatic, no symptoms, that's why we're calling every day to check on their symptoms. And I do get calls like that, not all the time, because we try to screen those to somebody else to help us while we're doing this investigation. We tell them, okay, this is the day you felt you were in contact with that person. And I don't mean passing by, but for the next 14 days, you can do a self-monitoring. And I'll get a lot of time, I can get their email, I can send them instructions. It's the same thing, you know, that has been on, you know, on our media about feverish aches, pains, you know, runny nose, you get cough, shortness of breath, you're really feeling congested, you've had this awful headache and you can't go up the stairs, you know, we get quite intricate, and some people only have just a mild, but we tell them to watch for 14 days, and if they feel a concern, they're developing symptoms, to call their provider.
All right, we're going to, I think I kind of got all that. We'll move on to Kimberly. You had your hand up for a little bit, so we'll go back to your question here. Go ahead. And I don't see you, Kimber. Are you there? All right, how about until Kimber comes, we'll go to Mike Taylor.
No, I'm here.
Oh. All right, there she is. Hold on, Mike. There's Kimber. Or whoever. Yep, there you go.
So, I want to ask, like, if a lodge or a boat or whoever has a positive case, and I'm assuming the whole place is locked down for 14 days. And then if another person becomes positive, then it's another 14 days.
I can't say that they're on lockdown for 14 days, but the other people, as long as at that lodge, would be monitored by public health, and they would be evaluated through their investigation process, and they would probably be self-monitoring themselves regardless, but at that point. But if somebody else did, I would assume that it starts that ticker over. That would be my guess.
Can I ask Lisa or somebody? Because I just...
That would be a, I mean, I think that'd be a public health question. I want Susan. She muted herself like I did it right, but we'll get her back on.
Okay, yeah, because...
Can you hear me? Travis and Kim?
Yep, go ahead.
All over the place. Yeah, they're going to be the people who spread it.
All right, Kim, Susan's here.
Can y'all hear me?
Yep.
Oh, okay. When we do contacts, we are given instructions. I don't know whether, you know, a lot of things have happened or not, but we're very clear. But also, wherever they're staying at, you know, and whether it's a grocery store, business, or anything, the ones who are positive, yes, they're hunkered down. If they are not, we consider a lot of groups like within that bubble. We have different family units. They're all quarantined together. You know, asymptomatic, you know, their tests have been negative, and there are some leeways. Each businesses, you know, have fishing lodges, and I've been on the fishing conference, have all submitted a plan, and it's just like the independent fishing vessels. They also have a contingency plan. And like Travis said, it's not necessarily a lockdown. It is, this is what we would ask you to do. Please do this, and then we're calling them every day. But can they take out the garbage? Yes. Can they go clean up around their place? They do not have to stay in a room with four walls. We ask them not to go out into town. Other communities I've dealt with, from all the way from Cordova and that, and they encourage visitors not to mingle with the town, to wear masks. Some communities I have, they insist on mask wearing if you go into any place, and you should have, you know, I tell people you should abide by that. But I agree with Travis. We encourage them to do this, to stay. And there's other criteria we go into. If they've had one negative and can get another negative, that kind of releases them. But if they're re-exposed by somebody else who is a positive, we have to start all over again with the quarantine and doing this. So I, you know, negative isn't foolproof. You know, it's, you can still come across it. I hope that answered your question, Kimber. You can check with me too if I wasn't clear enough.
I know, Kimber, you probably want to follow up on that, but we're going to move on to Mike Taylor so that we can get, I've got four or five more people asking questions. Mm-hmm. So we want to get moving a little bit. So go ahead, Mike Taylor, you're up.
Okay, thank you, Travis. As a council member, I'm looking at this from the standpoint of evaluating the system. We're trying to keep COVID from spreading into our community, and we have decided for the time being, at least, to do the very best that we can with the program that the governor and the State Department of Health has set forth here. Travis, you've done a great job in getting the airport set up and running. And the fact that we have had a case that has been identified by that system is a positive indicator that the system may be working. I don't know if we can find out, it would be helpful for us to know in evaluating this, whether the person who was found to be positive was subject to a quarantine requirement while they were waiting for that test. And if they were subject to that, were they doing so? If they in fact were following the rules and quarantining rigorously as they're supposed to, then that's an indicator that the system was working. Presumably they are isolated and there wasn't an opportunity for the virus to spread into the community. But if they were out and moving around and violating the requirements of the quarantine, then we've got a problem that we've got to deal with. The council may have the opportunity to consider going to tougher requirements than the governor has set forth. As a small community, we can at least ask for that. And so we'll be looking at options like that, but it would be helpful if we can get background on a case like this, if it's allowable, to know whether that person was supposed to be quarantining and whether in fact they were. Thanks.
So I can answer only from the being the airport screener side of this on what happens with the declaration forms and how that process happens. So that what I like to see is that there's 95 people here listening to this. So that's pretty cool. So anyways, after we get those forms, the city, not the city, but the screener contracted position, they fax those off to State Department of Health and Social Services. And then they go immediately into the shredder. That's what the contract says, and that's what we're gonna uphold until I'm told at a different time. The council might be able to, and the mayor might be able to request those forms, or some of that stuff could be passed on, but a lot of this falls under the HIPAA guidelines, which is gonna make it almost dang near impossible for that. Susan, you might be able to add into a little bit of that too on your side.
Am I unmuted?
Nope, you're good.
Okay. Again, I have to reiterate what Travis and even Lisa, we have to go by HIPAA guidelines. Now, once I contact anybody, I go over all that they are supposed to do that day that I am in contact. I don't know about what the city has set up. I know other places have what they call ambassadors. You know, when I was dealing with other communities, trawlers coming in the harbor not doing this, and they hired or Goodwill ambassadors to, you know, hey, you need to do this. But from the day I contact anybody, I am going over everything that the state has recommended and CDC. We go by that guidelines, and if they get sick, even the clinics, we reiterate on the positive that way. And this is the thing I mentioned earlier, and Travis, I may have sent it to you. There is one thing on a confirmed positive. If they are asymptomatic for 10 days, not the 14, they are free to go. And that's according to CDC and the studies we've done. And I give them a letter of release. And the same thing when people finish their 14-day quarantine. They need it for the jobs, corrections we did with that. But the thing with the positive is if they stay asymptomatic for that 10 days, I know some people kind of forget or they don't know all our, details that we go through. They are okay. Anybody in the community, we still tell them social distancing, wear a mask, except, when you're eating, good hand washing. It's definitely here. We're definitely seeing a resurgence, and we just want to keep the numbers down. And I still get calls from people out of state calling. Some places don't do this pre-testing, so that's how come they get it done at the airport. And right now, I think Colorado is one of the states that people can get a pre-test before they hop on the plane. And other states, they are watching our system, which I think it is good because we want to keep our numbers down. We are going through a lot of testing. Negatives, it takes a little bit of time to contact everybody. Positive, I can guarantee you if a positive came up late afternoon, I would still, or late this afternoon, I would get a call tonight and have to get things going. But I just want to remind the people, it's
a different mindset when they're a confirmed positive versus a quarantine. And Mike, I hope that answers your question. I know we have to go by confidentiality, federal business and that, or it's a huge legal fine and big to do. So we can't, and we get some people who are very open about it. I mean, they have it plastered all over Facebook so people know. So it just varies how people are and people feel and how they're treated. It is a scary thing, especially if you have somebody who is chronic in the community. And so we try to encourage the social distancing.
All right, we're going to go. Danae, I saw your hand up. Are you still got a question? You're up, Danae. You're maybe getting unmuted. There you go.
Hey, Travis.
Hey.
Hey, Travis. This is Steve. Hey, do we know if said person was indeed quarantined? Or do we know if said person was in our community, associating with our community and stores, whatever said being? Then if so, there's going to be a whole lot of us that are going to be on that list, I would presume.
So once again, the information that I've released is all of the information that has been put out to us at this time. So I don't have those numbers. And I kind of like Susan just answered that would have to be shared by them to be put out and all of that stuff. So I think we'll be learning more over the next couple of days on how all that stuff is going to play out and all that. So I know I'm beating around the question there, but really we can't answer that question and I don't have that answer. So, and I know Susan's not going to give any of that information out yet. Sorry.
Yeah, Roger. That's the reason I was putting the hand up and down, but I was apprehensive. But in that note, then I presume that a lot of us should just stay tight to our places. Then I would say, huh?
If you believe that you might have had contact with anybody that has had the COVID-19 virus or has been tested positive or whatever, the best thing that you can do is really take extreme social distancing and minimize all interactions that you can and monitor your symptoms, taking your temperature a couple times a day and all that stuff. So that's the best recourse right now. And if you start feeling symptoms, then call the clinic and schedule that. So.
Okay. Right on, buddy. Thank you.
Yep. All right. Julie Howell, you're up next. There you go. Unmuted. Julie, are you there? We'll come back to you, Julie. How about Shelley? You can go.
Thanks, Travis. What is the definition of non-resident? I'm wondering if that includes people that are seasonal visitors over here that possibly own homes. So when we've learned that this is an asymptomatic non-resident, what does that mean?
Susan, can you answer that one for me? Oh, you were unmuted. There you go.
Okay, Shelley, thanks. What that asymptomatic means, they have no fever-like symptoms. They don't have coughing, chest pain, runny nose. They are absolutely to their and that in perfect health. It comes as a surprise. And so asymptomatic is no symptoms at all, no fatigue, no, they feel great.
And how about the non-resident part of that question? What defines a non-resident, like is a seasonal resident considered that, or do you have to have a collected dividend type of thing?
You know, on that, I can only partially answer that because I've been in some of my communities. What they consider a resident is somebody who's paying taxes. In the state of Alaska, a resident is a voter. You're paying whether city, you're part of the PFD system. Non-resident is you have a driver's license from another state, you're voting in another state, you're not claiming anything PFD, anything with the state of Alaska. And so like I said, some of the communities I've been into, they have their snowbirds, but actually the snowbirds are residents of that community and paying into the taxes. Even though they're not living there year round, they live according to the guidelines by the state to be an Alaskan resident. And then they also have their community residents if there are taxes, property taxes, and that to pay. Does that answer your question?
Are you good with that, Shelley? You're unmuted. You're breaking up. All right, you're breaking up there, Shelley. So we're gonna try to get back. I know we're trying to finish this here, and we got two more hands up, and I'll try to get through those fast. Julie, are you back yet? Your hand's still up. Julie Howe, going once, going twice. My dad's a way better auctioneer. I know he's listening too, so I know he's a way better auctioneer doing that. Anyways, Julie, I'm muting you. Kimber, you're up again.
So I just had a lot of texts from a lot of people, and this is their question. They are on Medicaid, and when we tried to buy Medivac insurance, it got refunded. But Airlift Northwest said that Medicaid would automatically cover, but other people said that Medicaid is not covering. Can you figure that out for them?
As far as I've been told, Medicaid should cover Air Medevac services. Now, What I will do is I will call LifeMed and I will call Airlift and I will call Guardian tomorrow. And I will double check all of that stuff and I will I'll get that information out. How about that? Unless anybody else has a better answer to that, but I'm pretty sure Medicaid covers all of that.
I had 23 texts to me about it. So,
all right. Yeah. I will double check that first thing in the morning. I will get that and shoot it over the news group, if nothing else.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yep. All right. Last one that I have right here is Lillian. You're up.
Thank you, Brad.
Oh, hey, Susan, how are you? Oh, you're muted again. I got you unmuted now, hopefully.
Okay, thanks for putting this together. Travis, this has been very informative. I just want to make sure, a little fact-checking here, that, you know, there's a lot of people in the community asking questions about our first positive case, and I want to make sure I've got my facts straight. So. As of today, June 12, we have a COVID positive tested person who is under quarantine for 10 days from the period of the test to the second test somewhere in town. And the public health nurse is calling that person every day to see if they're developing symptoms because they've been asymptomatic. And but there is no mechanism in place right now to check that that person is actually complying with quarantine restrictions and staying out of public places in town. Is that correct? Thanks.
So, yes, that's correct. So most everything that you said about the quarantine times and all that, that's all good. And like we can't release any information that says how they flew in, if they had a test before that, and how they tested at the airport. That's information that we can't release to the public. That's all covered under HIPAA stuff. So, we can't tell you that, but what Susan and her team are doing at the public health nurse office is tracing these calls and doing that. And I know she's got her hand up, so just butt in and talk. You can always cut in on me, anybody that wants to.
Oh, can you hear me, Travis?
Yep.
Okay. I just want to slightly clarify, a confirmed positive is only released 10 days if they are asymptomatic from the time they were tested, or no longer, if they had symptoms, no longer have showing symptoms if they first started with symptoms. Some workplaces will require a release within that time to have two tests 24 hours apart. That's an individual, choice or a work-related. But that person, anybody who is a confirmed positive, if they develop symptoms in that time period, we extend their quarantine out until they are symptom free, or for 72 hours after that, they're Tylenol free and they can't do this. We have very strict guidelines about when we release them. So it's not just 10 days. I just want to be clear, it's not just the 10 days to go, but we have to check with them every day to be sure they have symptoms. If they develop symptoms, that changes the whole course of their stay.
Can I ask a question, Travis?
Yeah, I've been trying to get, somebody's been trying to get on for a while and they text me the question real fast. And just to clear some stuff up. So if you get tested at the airport, I just want everybody to know that your test gets sent out the next morning on Alaska seaplanes, weather dependent. Those tested for 72 hours. Once we take them, they're good for 72 hours sitting in the refrigerator. Right now, those tests have been going to Sitka Search Mount Edgecombe Lab and being processed. They're taking anywhere from 3 to 7 days-ish to get people sometimes notified. And that's whether you get it through the mail or get it through your email type scenario. So there's different times on that. If you fly in on Saturday and take a test at our airport, that test doesn't get sent out until Monday morning. So there's no flights on Sunday out of Gustavus. Alaska Airlines does not accept cargo at this time. We're working with the state and trying to get that to happen so that that is a more direct flight back into town. So we're working on those up the chain. So just that question, I think, was most of what they asked. It depends on if they tested before they came into the state, whether they have to quarantine or do minimized reactions. Have minimal interactions with people, which is like extreme social distancing in theory. So I am in the process of putting out a very detailed, and Whitney has shared it a couple times, of traveling into Alaska that Dr. Zink put up on one of her slideshows the other day that answers those questions really well. And I'll try to pass that over. We'll get it out and about so people understand when you fly in and how that process works. All right, so from here on out, anybody that has a question, I'm not taking any more questions after the hands that are up, so that I can let all the guests that we had that took some time out of their dinner times and Friday nights can take off. So, Kimber, I know you have a question, but I'm gonna get to the other three first. So, Sean, you're up first. Go ahead, you're unmuted. All right, till Sean figures his out. How about you, Noel? Can you jump in?
I'm here.
You're good.
Okay. Awesome. I think you mostly just answered my last question, and that was, what are the recommendations for people who are coming into town before they get their test results? And so I just want to make sure that I understood your answer correctly. If they did not test before they came to Gustavus, you recommend extreme social distancing. But if they did test, they can not quarantine until their results come back. Is that correct?
Yeah, to a point. So if you've taken a test within 72 hours of departure and you show up with negative results, you can do minimal interactions until you get your next test. If you show up with a test that is still pending within 72 hours, you have to quarantine, send those results back into the state until hopefully they're negative. Then you get minimal interactions, and then you get your second negative test, and then you have no state restrictions. You show up with a test that's 5 days out from departure. You get minimal interactions.
You take a second test at the airport, you have minimal interactions.
If you don't take a test before you get here and you take a test at the airport, you have to quarantine until those results are back in, then have minimal interactions until your second test is negative. If you take no test at all, you have to go straight to 14-day quarantine, and then you have no state restrictions and all that good stuff. So most and everything is right is so at this point is on the honor system. So like that, you have to make sure you turn in your test results back into the state if it came in a different way and it wasn't that way. Like if you got them from out of state and you're waiting for them, and it's honor system that you're minimizing the interactions as best as possible. So it's a lot of honor system, and it's a lot of take the test before you come into the state. That's the best way to do it. All right.
Right. Well, my understanding is, can the city mandate that people test before they come into the state? I mean, can we place tighter restrictions in the state of Alaska? Is that even a possibility for me to talk to my council members about?
Yeah. That's my last question. The state has put out there that communities can do other restrictions. We have to send that off to Commissioner Crum and have that approved by the state in order to do it. And then just the main thing is the follow up on an enforcement side of it, and how we're going to do that side of it is the big, I think, thing that we have to sell to the commission. So anyways,
okay,
we're going to,
thank you.
Yep. Sean, are you on there? No. Kimber, you got one last question?
It's a few, but I'm like, is there anybody meeting the boats that are coming in the small boat harbor? Like, there's sailboats out there, leisure cruisers coming in. I met a few of them, and I said, oh, you need to stay far away. And they go, why? And so I explained that we had a positive case in Gustavus. And so you have people coming in there, and there's no signage. There's not anything.
Yeah, so
we need to have a way to stop that. Well, and then if a lodge or a boat or whoever, I mean, we know this is happening. So they're going to sequester their people, but there's a lot of those kind of lodges that just don't honor the system. So how do we make them honor the system? Because all those people are running around our community. I watched every single plane, and I watched them go through our community, and they went to our post office, some of them, and some went to the grocery store, and some went to the lodge. I mean, I've watched. I'm watching.
Yep.
And
there you are.
And many of us, about 30 of us, are watching, and they're not following protocol. So they're going to infect our community through not following the law.
Yeah.
And I actually think we need to bring an officer in here to protect our community against people who don't care about our community.
Can I start answering your question so we can move on? I'm sorry to cut you off, Kimber, but we're already going over 30 minutes.
I'm sorry.
I do want to pass on that we are.
There's
We are making signage down at the docks that enforces CY 2016, which is the COVID rule number 3, which says that you can't be in any of the dock areas unless you're past the state quarantine and doing all of the following the state regulations. So signage is being put out, or will be being put out. We're sending quotes out to Alaska Litho to make weatherproof, nice big ones that you can't miss, not little 8x10 sheets of paper. So that's one thing. We are also making signage for all of the, it's just all being made and done. This all came about on June 6th, which has been 6 days ago. So we're all trying to work really hard and trying to fill in all the cracks, because there are lots of cracks that we're all finding daily. And we're trying to make sure that we fix those things as quick as we possibly can and jump on them. So signage is being made. We're working on doing all the other stuff. I don't know, because we've been on this meeting, but rumor had it that the governor was supposed to speak tonight. I don't know if that happened. And that was supposed to address small boats and private planes, I was hearing. So hopefully some of that happened and we can get some guidance on that. But I'm assuming, and I've also heard rumor in my meetings that they've adopted like a point of, in the state system somewhere, a point of contact for the ferry to start these type of systems for looking at how they're going to do the ferry system. So the state is looking at how we can do and what type of restrictions and all of the stuff on that. But we got to remember too that if you're traveling just from one of the small village or towns and cities around here, or villages, that you can travel intrastate in between the communities without any restrictions right now, except what our community has put on in our resolutions, which is basically following all of the state mandates and adhering to the social distancing guidelines by the state and CDC and anything that we don't have anything stronger in our city. So those are the main things there. So we are working on our signage. We are working on trying to figure out how to do all of the little boats and planes. That just is all going to take a little time for us to also figure out those cracks. So they should know also by traveling into our community.
You have had Travis since January to figure this out. This city is so disrespectful of their citizens, because you've had a long time to put all these plans in place, and a lot of people trying to put them in place. So this city is unbelievable how your response is. It's incredible.
All right, Kimber, thanks for all of the criticism and anything that you want to give us, because we do listen to it, we do take it, and we try to improve on it. So I'm sorry that you feel that way.
I do want
you to know that these things change daily on us, and that we are trying to stay on top of it the best that we can. But it does seem that the day that this happened,
many of us have been telling you since February.
Kimber, I'm sorry. We got to move on with this because we have other people doing this. Sean, have you come back?
Can you hear me?
Yep, I can barely hear you.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Still really faint.
Okay, I'll try. This is Janet. Thank you for your patience. Not sure why the audio is bad. My question is about contact tracing. How does that work in Gustavus, say if the person said they went to the post office? How do we determine who they might have interacted with? I mean, we don't have cameras everywhere. That, you know, and there's other examples around town. And my second part of the question, and maybe this was answered earlier, but if someone is contacted by the public health nurse because they were in contact with the positive patient, does the entire family quarantine? I assume that the entire family, if say my husband was in contact, then the whole family quarantines. Is that correct?
There you go, Susan. Thank you.
You want me to answer that, Travis?
Yes, please.
It depends within that family. Husband and wife, more than likely, probably. We go down to it involves if it's kids, adults, who all were in that contact. A lot of times, not necessarily the whole family is under quarantine. We do consider the household,
but a lot of household has two stories, or that person was, you know, separated, they just got into town. We go through an in-depth thing. And a lot of times, yes, you're right, within that bubble, that family unit, we keep them all together because people as a family do things together. Quarantine for contacts, we have certain criteria, the distance and how long that we go by, not just if you're passing by, you know, or saying hi. It's quite in depth. But as soon as we get notification of a positive, we are on that case. We are screening them, where they went, who they are, and we consult with the epidemiology people, CDC, to determine. And if you are named as a contact, you would have heard from us. And that's what I tell people, because people get concerned and it's real hard to understand all the changes or the updates that we do. And that's how come I explain sometimes it's different if you're a confirmed positive versus a quarantine. But there's certain tests, like Travis mentioned earlier, you know, some people can get tested before they come up negative, and then within that 7 to 14 day period later on. And that helps with their quarantine, but it's not foolproof, because I could be negative today and next week I could be positive, you know. And so that's how come we encourage social distancing, hand washing, you know, be really respectful of everybody year round, because it is here and we do want to keep the numbers down. Does that help your question?
I think you pretty much got it. I just lost their name as I muted them. But anyway, so they're there. Did that answer your guys' stuff, Sean? Janet? Did that answer your question, Janet?
Yes, thank you.
Thanks. All right, well, I just want to say thanks for everybody coming out, and thanks to Search, Megan, Lisa, Carly, and the public health nurses, Susan. Valerie wasn't able to make it, but I just want to thank everybody for coming out, and we'll try to do this again and more often so that the communities, our community is more aware of what's going on and all of that good stuff. So once again, thanks for showing up. I'm ending it for everybody.